There are those Sundays that, as the preacher, I want to take an X-Acto knife to the text. Not necessarily because the text is problematic, but because in our current era, we're unable to see exactly what Jesus was intending for us to see. There is something happening here that we just don't understand, and it's important to understand what Jesus is doing. And I would even say it's essential for us to understand what's happening here historically and pedagogically so that we can begin to get Jesus's message, this message that he is giving to the folks who are still listening to his Sermon on the Mount. This passage that we have is, in some regard, the third act of Jesus's Sermon on the Mount, which is his vision for what it looks like to be Jesus, his vision for what it looks like for us to live in the world as creatures beloved of God and empowered to share God's love to others. I would ask something of you up front that might be a bit of a challenge this morning. So you heard all that stuff about adultery and divorce. That can be triggering for us. My parents were divorced when I was 4, and I can assure you that I don't think of my mother as an adulteress. So I am asking us just to let the stuff that we have heard in the past and the stuff that might have bubbled up this morning, I'm asking you just to let it go for the next 12 to 15 minutes. Trust me that we are going to get to the bottom of this, but it's going to take a bit of explaining so that we have a clearer idea of where Jesus and his exaggeration and his drama is coming from. So let's try to get to this place where we can hear what Jesus is really intending to say, and let's try to hear it together. If you think you know what this passage is trying to communicate, then I'm asking you just to forget it. You would have to be a ridiculous nerd to have any idea, any clue of what's happening here. Takes one to know one. So I'm going to repeat a bit of the reading so that we can remember it, and we'll see how this goes. The passage that we have from Matthew this morning, it's familiar. It starts, Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said of those in ancient times, you shall not murder." Now, if I were to ask you, what did you hear in that line historically? Maybe you could tell me, maybe not. But if I were to rephrase our translation in a slightly different way and say that our passage from Matthew this morning starts with Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said of those in ancient times, thou shalt not kill," then I'm almost positive that many of us would have a sense of like, oh, it's the Ten Commandments, or at least it's one of the ten. You hear that, yes? You can hear that. Yeah, we hear it. And if we were to read through this passage again in its entirety, we would hear two more commandments too, right? Do you remember? Yes, you remember. Thou shalt not commit adultery, and thou shalt not bear false witness, or we shouldn't lie, as we say today. So look, here's the dealio. Anytime Jesus is bringing up the Ten Commandments, or bringing up what Paul would call the law, or what our Jewish brothers and sisters would call Torah, we better listen carefully in order for us to really get what's going on here. Not only do we have to recognize these commandments, this Torah within what he's saying, but we also have to have some understanding of historic rabbinic pedagogy. Did you hear me when I said nerd? Probably some rabbis don't even know about this, but lucky y'all, I'm a total nerd, and especially when it comes to this stuff, and I stumbled upon some this week, so I'm going to share it with you. So Jesus is engaging in a rabbinic practice here that's called building or making a fence around the Torah. So we have to have some sense here that a violation of the Torah was the worst thing that might happen, the worst thing that one might do. In order to prevent this from happening, the rabbis add law surrounding the law, so that if any laws are violated, it's the surrounding laws that are violated, not the law from God's self. We could say it another way. The rabbis, the humans, create human law around the God-made law, so that if law is violated, it's the human law that gets violated rather than the God-made law. So let's create an analogy here so we can be perfectly clear about what's going on rhetorically or pedagogically. Let's pretend, just for the sake of this sermon this morning, that on one of those stone tablets that Moses brought down from the mountain, on one of those stone tablets that Moses brings down from heaven, there was a line that read, "Thou shalt not have mud on your living room floor." Almost all of us knows that cleanliness is next to godliness, and we know we can't have mud on the living room floor because it's a violation of the God-made law, and God is grieved when there is mud on the floor. We're playing around a bit here. Fast forward, it's a week or two later. It's my turn to preach. We all have a sense of what's written on that stone tablet. I know that I have to protect God's law at all costs. So I begin to make a fence around it. I rise for the reading of the law. I say a prayer from the pulpit, and I begin my sermon with, "You have heard it said, lo, these 2 weeks ago." I use "lo" as a rhetorical device to hold your attention here. "You have heard it said, lo, these 2 weeks ago, thou shalt not have mud on your living room floor. But I saith unto you," again using the traditional language as a rhetorical tool and to add a little bit of humor into the sermon, "but I saith unto you, thou shalt not wear shoes in the house, for it is better to remove your shoes on the porch and for your feet to be cold than it is to get mud on the living room floor and violate the law and grieve God. Further, I saith unto you, thou shalt not leave the house during the months of April and May, and maybe even the first 2 weeks of June, depending upon the snowpack and how quickly it melts. Because we all know it gets muddy then, and we know it is better to stay home and starve than it is to be a muddy imbecile. So we can see how the rabbis make a fence around the law. The law is surrounded by more law. Much of that law is created in really exaggerated ways to draw our attention back to what's really important. So we step back from this experience and we ask ourselves, so can I really not leave the house in April? Or we ask ourselves, and here the stakes are a little higher for us because so many of us have been there. We ask ourselves, so in ending a marriage where everyone was struggling and miserable, and enduring that pain and trauma that we all endured, did I make my former partner anathema to God, unlovable? Am I too to believe that I am unlovable? And then we're like, wow, that's so complicated. That's not it. That's not it. That's not what Jesus is pointing us toward. That's not what this is about. It's not true. Of course it's not true. When we think, when we hear God, the one up there on the mountain with Moses and Jesus, the one who just built a fence around the Torah by saying you should pluck your eye out, and all the other earnest, wholehearted rabbis who have tried to shine light on the God who we know to be love, when we begin to translate that verse like that, in that alternative way, we can hear them say like, whoa, 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 simmer down, y'all. It was never about the rules themselves. It's always been about the spirit of the rules. You see, God, Jesus, and all the other earnest, wholehearted rabbis, all the well-meaning, love-driven preachers in our lives, all of those have simply been trying to point us back toward what's behind the rules. And what's behind the rules, every single one of them, every single time, what's behind them is love. Love of God, love of neighbor, love of other, just love. You say, thou shalt not bear false witness. We can't lie? No. Why? Why can't we lie? Because when we're dishonest with one another, it prevents us from having deep, meaningful, life-giving, loving relationships with each other. Oh, I thought it was just that lying was wrong. No, man, get out of your head and into your heart. It's always about the love. It's never been about the rule. The rule just points to love. If you don't see the pointer on the rule, then change your perspective, because the rule is just a pointer, man. The rule is just a pointer, and it always points to love. I suppose maybe in this age, the one we live in now, I suppose because of how tangled we get up in our heads, mostly because of gall-derned fundamentalism, I suppose maybe in this age we shouldn't build a fence around the law. I suppose in our age, each law, each rule that we have, each boundary that we set for ourselves should come with a map. And that map should lead us back to love, no matter the winding, crazy course it takes. They should all lead back to love, because that's why they're there in the first place. Rather than making a fence around the Torah, we could draw maps for each other. Maps that would lead us back to the heart of the Torah, which is love. Church, sisters, brothers, children of God, nothing is more important than loving one another and loving God. Nothing is more important than that. There are a bazillion ways to do it, and almost as many excuses not to. And no doubt, we do that love work imperfectly. We always will. Always. But we're getting better at it. Can you feel that? Can you feel that we're just getting a little better at it? One light bill at a time, one warm coat at a time, one text to check in at a time, one prayer at a time, one hymn at a time, one Valentine at a time, one wink or wave at a time, one phone call at a time, one helping hand or listening ear at a time. We're getting better at loving, and we're doing it together. And this makes me very happy and proud to be one of you. Amen.